Good evening, y'all. Welcome to another episode of Africa Chat Podcast. It's been quite a long while since we posted, but the plan is to keep posting more regularly as we move forward in the year 2024. And thank you for listening to this and sharing in our content and sharing ideas for development within Africa. So I practiced in the field of tax law. So I would say that I'm a tax law expert. In fact, I'm doing my PhD at the moment on tax law, and specifically on taxing the digital economy within a few African countries. So I'm doing a comparative study, and for instance, between Kenya and Nigeria, how are they taxing their digital economies? Kenya and Nigeria are unique in that, at least at the point when the OECD is the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. It's mainly made up of European countries and the US, but at the point of discussing issues around taxing the digital economy, countries within Africa were included as within the inclusive framework. So what would happen is that people who normally would not be having a say at the OECD were allowed a say when it came to the issue of taxing the digital economy. When it came to coming up with the two pillars, which are covered in the OECD solution, while Kenya and Nigeria participated in the discussions, at the point of signing off, Kenya and Nigeria opted not to sign off. So, and I know as of 2024, that might have changed quite a bit. I may not have the specific information of how far Kenya and Nigeria have gone to join the inclusive framework, not the inclusive framework, but to sign on to the OECD solution. But I know there have been keen pursuit of Kenya and Nigeria and any other country that did not join that document to join it in. So anyway, because at the initial point when this solution was being released in 2021, Kenya and Nigeria did not sign on it. And that was quite interesting. And also because that Kenya has the digital service tax, which has been changing in its form and not in its form, but yeah, well, in its form, because I would say like right now there is tax on the transfer of digital assets, which was not there. There's different definitions of, let's say, what is being targeted by the digital service tax. So, and Nigeria, on the other hand, also had a form of taxation targeting the digital economy, which was influenced by significant digital presence in Nigeria, that someone will now be required to pay tax in a certain way. So anyway, that's the topic around which I'm writing my research on. And today I wanted to speak about some thoughts around the conundrum that is taxation, and especially within Africa, and some thoughts on that. First to say is that while Africa being comprised of different countries, there will be differences in the taxation systems. So I'll give an example of like within Kenya, the taxation under the pay-as-you-earn system, which is the employment tax. What happens is that the employers are required to deduct tax from their employees and remit it under the pay-as-you-earn system. And every month, a certain amount is deducted from employees based on the graduated skill that is provided. So that if you earn between, let's say, Kenya shilling 100,000 and 200,000, as an example, I'm not giving the exact band, then you're subject to tax, let's say, at 20%. In South Africa, there will be a system of taxing employees there, and it's also a graduated scale for South Africa, but you find that the taxation rates in South Africa, like for the high earners, are way higher than Kenya, for instance. But there's a concept of taxing employees there. Same with Uganda, Tanzania, Nigeria. The tax may be different. It may take different forms, but there is a form of taxation of like employees. Also, let's take an example of like value-added tax. This I know is different, and different, quite different, could be significantly different for countries, because in Kenya is value-added tax, in South Africa is value-added tax. The rates are quite different. Uganda, Tanzania also have value-added tax, which ranges anywhere from like as low as 5% within African countries, and could go as high as 18%. So what I'm saying is that there will be differences in how maybe a system works, but there's a form of taxation. So it's the form of taxation that I'm focusing on, speaking about today. And what I think, or I have found from my research, there's a trajectory that taxation is going towards. And at the moment, you find most governments within Africa, they are focusing quite a bit on taxing the people who are working. On it's called taxation of labor rather than taxation of capital. But by that it means the people who own companies, for instance, the people who own businesses may not be as heavily taxed as the employees in those companies. You may agree with me, or you may have experienced it yourself, observed it yourself, or you may think, why, how would that be the case? So let's take an example of like someone who's investing for the first time. You'll find that first through a company, you'll find in most countries. I'll pick Kenya as an example for now, because while I have good knowledge of other countries as well, but I practice mainly in Kenya, so that can things come to mind faster on like these things when it comes to Kenya. So for instance, if you're investing, let's say, in the hotel industry in Kenya, and you are building a hotel, you've bought the land, you've built it up, you put the designs and all that, there's an investment allowance that you'll be given. The government will reward you for investing in the hotel sector in Kenya by giving you a certain allowance. So what that means is, let's say you've invested $1 million in Kenya. What happens is that a percentage of that will be given to you this year as a deduction against any income that you might have, so that you reduce your taxes by this allowance that you're given because you've invested in the hotel industry in Kenya. And then that percentage, you're allowed to claim, let's say, 20% this year, 20% next year, and for a period of 5 years until you recoup your investment. So this is not just in the hotel industry, it's also in other sectors. Different sectors have the allowances that will be allowed, that will be given, almost like as a reward for investing in Kenya. Same happens in South Africa, there will be investment allowances. Most countries will give an investment allowance. So this is a person who owns a company who is coming in as an investor. They are given an investment allowance, so that you find sometimes they will be in, while they are in operating profit. What that means is that there are people coming to the hotel, there are people eating food, they are making money out of it. At the time of making payment for tax, they'll be in a tax loss position because they're being given this reward of an allowance for having invested in that industry. What that means is that for a period, let's say, of 5 years or however long it takes, sometimes you may even be given the deduction once. Like, you know, if you invested $1 million, you'll be allowed to claim a certain, like, almost 100% of that in your first year of operation, yeah? So you'll be in a tax loss position, meaning that you'll not be paying any taxes for a period of time. The employee who comes to work for this hotel, let's say the hotel gets a chef working there. So this chef, the minute they start working there, they earn a salary. The salary is subject to tax. There's no allowance in the sense of, like, we appreciate you coming to work for the hotel that has just started up, so we will, you know, like, hold back taxing you for the next 4 or 5 years. So what happens is that this hotel will not be paying taxes for, let's say, several years, while the employees who are working for this hotel will be paying taxes from the word go. Not only that, they'll be paying tax on the entire, other than for the reliefs that they may get, you know, like personal relief, an insurance relief, mortgage relief, and other small deductions which you cannot even compare to an investment allowance by any stretch of the imagination. You may get those reliefs, but your salary is not, you don't get any allowance against your salary for any amount of time that you're working for this company. So the point I'm making is that right now, the highest source of taxation is from people who offer labor. And this means all forms of labor. I mean, this is anyone, not just, you know, casual workers or anyone. It's anyone who is not an investor, anyone who is not the owner of this capital. They are on the labor side offering services. They are the most taxed, or they are the main target of taxation. And the system of collecting that tax is very effective in that your employer is one who is asked to deduct this tax and remit it to the government. And if they fail to deduct the tax and remit it to the government, then there's a penalty that the employer is charged. So there's every motivation for the employer to levy this tax and remit it to the government. For the employer themselves, it's a self-assessment system. Yeah? So now what happens is that the company itself, at the end of the year, is the one that will do its own books and take its allowance and declare what there is to be declared. In case the revenue authority feels like these people are not declaring the taxes that they should, then maybe there will be an investigation by the revenue service or revenue authority at that point. So that's the point. And also, we are at the point where what is now going to happen is that as employers also get to use like the digital assets in their businesses, also the amount of labor that they're employing is going to decrease. That's the reality of the things, yeah? So like you hear someone like, how many times, you know, for instance, will someone be looking for ways of automating their services, like even within the hotel, so that they are more efficient, they are faster, and there are ways to do that. There's AI, use of data, yeah, to just most of the systems within like the hotel, so that where you'd have needed like, let's say, 5 people, you don't need them anymore. You only maybe need like 2. And also significant people functions that would otherwise have been significant positions where people are earning quite a significant amount of income. Right now, if you automate them, there's no reason for you to have such people. So I will just attempt an example, yeah? So if it's like the human resource department, and I'm using that as an example because for most companies and employees, they are not big fans of the human resource department. You can refer to the series The Office about HR and Michael. But point is, using the human resource department, if a business wanted to get rid of that, and over the 2020, due to the pandemic, people are working from home, yeah? People are working from home. People were provided with systems of working from home, whether it's the company setting up online meeting platforms or however it was done, so that what was the purpose of the human resource department in terms of like the day-to-day things they would have done, you know, like monitoring, I don't know, dealing with employee complaints, or there's quite a bit. They possibly were there for certain things like, you know, recruitment or any sort of claims that the employees would have, but their functionality was really reduced. And also even further is, let's say someone is able to have their employees, you know, like key in certain data and their data managed and the data collected of employees through a system that doesn't necessarily need someone looking through it like from an HR function, then that's a person who is not needed. So in the past, someone who was key to an entity might not be required anymore, depending on how much the entity invests in technology. What this means is that governments right now are focused on taxing labor. But with time, as significant functions are now transitioned into, you know, into through digital use of digital means, they are taken up by digital functions. What will happen is that there will be a reduction in how much the government will be able to collect in the labor side. So that will either mean that there will be more taxation of the few people that can be found within the labor bracket, or the government will have to shift and look elsewhere. And that's a reality of where we are moving. We are moving towards that. Either the labor, and that means the employees, will keep the taxation on them will keep going up and up and up, to the extent that anyone who is working will be so overtaxed that it will make no sense for you to even to you when you receive that salary at the end of the year, how much you're actually paying to the government. Or what is going to happen is that the government will need to shift and look to other sources of tax revenue, which I would think logically should be that if that's where the government will be heading, it should start now by looking at, like, for instance, how do we effectively tax, like, someone who has introduced this digital systems. Should we be looking for ways to tax the digital systems, and to what extent should we tax it? That's my topic of research for my PhD on taxing the digital economy within Africa. And at first, when I was starting my research, I was persuaded, deeply persuaded, thoroughly persuaded that the solution, there must be taxation of the digital economy, and there must be a way to go about it. And that way should be a solution that is very much Africa-oriented rather than one that is global-oriented. After I had looked through, like, the OECD solution and wondered how much of the African input was taken into account. And this is not just me alone. You can look at writings by ATAF, for instance, the Africa Tax Administrative Framework. You can also even listen to our past discussions where we've had guests who have been sharing their thoughts on, like, the OECD solution and how far it goes to helping Africa. But now that I'm almost after the many readings I've had, I'm starting to wonder if a solution for taxing the digital economy is going to be successful if, like, for instance, it's only Kenya using it, or whether there needs to be a more collaborative approach. I'll be doing another podcast, so I'll be speaking about some thoughts on why I think maybe a solution, a country-specific solution to taxing the digital economy may not work long-term, that there needs to be more collaborative approach by many countries. It could be within the African Union. That would be perfect if there was, like, a common system or a common approach within Africa on taxing the digital economy. But also, thing is that if you think about the big digital businesses right now, like what I'm using right now, and I'll at any point, I'll either be in Kenya, I'll be in South Africa, or I'll be, or, you know, like, at some point I'm in an African country. What are some of the technology solutions I'm using? For entertainment, I'll be using Netflix, which is not African. I'm accessing a system which is not an African solution. I'll be using my Instagram. I'll be using my Facebook. I'll be using X. Right now, the software that I'm using for recording of this podcast are all from US or some European country. So thing is that African countries most times are, after you see what Africa is offering, what the rest of the world is offering to Africa, Africa are net importers of these digital solutions. So again, it got me thinking, there is need for a solution on tapping the digital economy. How much would Africa alone go about it? Noting that it's like Africa, most times the solutions that are being used are being imported into Africa. Fair enough. I mean, there are countries which are doing really well and they will have their own digital solutions. Yeah, like South Africa is to be applauded, like, of the solutions that are domestic and used, you know, like for social media, it's everywhere, like YouTube, everyone is using it despite the country you're in. But you'll find, like, the solutions that are quite domestic, same as Kenya, you know, like even the payment system, quite unique to Kenya, Nigeria also. But when you look at, like, the communication platforms, we'll be using Zoom, we'll be using Skype, we'll be using WebEx, we'll be using, you know, like these platforms which have been developed, which we are all using, but they're all coming from either the US or Europe. Google, Safari, you know, like all these solutions. So my point is, so I got to thinking, you know, how much can Africa go at it alone? But the point I wanted to make as I draw this to a conclusion is that within Africa, the governments need to realize that right now the focus is on taxing labor, is on taxing anyone who's employed, is being targeted, taxed, and being taxed effectively. But as more digital solutions come and replacing these significant people functions, what is going to happen is that revenue from labor is likely with time to decrease. Whether it's a significant decrease or significant remains to be seen. But if your main focus is that even the insignificant decrease is likely to be felt as a source of tax revenue. So that's why the focus needs to try not only for the benefit of your citizens, but also for future planning. Look at what other ways can we raise tax revenue, which is not completely overtaxing the population. I hope these ideas are you thinking, because we are a platform that aims to share ideas across Africa, and you can leave your thoughts, your ideas and your comments on any of our social media platforms, Africa I Share. And you can also write to us directly on any of our social media pages, and we will be happy to hear you. That's it for today. Goodbye.